my honor and privilege to be with you here today. I always enjoy my time when I be able to come here. And my problem this morning is two of my favorite preachers are here, both named Steve. And I'm stuck up here having to speak to you, and you're stuck with me. My prayer is that the Lord, either through me or in spite of me, will give you the message that He knows each one of you need. I want to talk to you this morning about an incident that you all know. It's one of those incidents that occurred in the Bible that everyone generally is familiar with. One of those that you could talk to the so-called man on the street about and ask them about, what do you know about the Bible? And they'll, give you two or three things about, Moses dividing the Red Sea and Jesus turning water into wine. One of them also they'll often mention is that Jesus walked on water. We talk about that a lot from time to time about it's a joke a lot of times in the business world. We'll have some business executive that perhaps thinks more of himself, more highly of himself than we should. And, in our comedy as well, he thinks he can walk on water. Because we know there's only been one individual ever be able to walk on water. That's what I want to talk to you about. It's in the book of Matthew, chapter 14. It's in three of the Gospels, in Matthew and Mark and John. I'll refer a little bit to Mark and John, but primarily to the one at Matthew is one I'll follow. Begins with the 22nd chapter of the book of Matthew. I mentioned a minute ago that, because we all know, we're all aware, that only one individual has ever been walk on water. But that's not right. Two people have walked on water. Jesus is the one we think about most normally, but in this instant, we see that there was somebody else who walked on water that day, and it was Peter. Peter walked on water, and we don't talk about it a whole lot because, Peter takes kind of a shot from time to time because we know he walked on water, didn't walk on very long, but he did walk on water. And then he looked away, and of course we know he started to sink. And so he's made fun of from time to time because he got scared and began to sink. My problem is that so many times I identify with the Apostle Peter is that I don't always keep my eyes on the Lord, and sometimes when we do, we begin to sink. And I think there's a great lesson in here from looking at Peter's experience of walking on water, because he did. Peter got out of the boat that day and walked on water. We'll cover the details here in a minute, but we know that Christ bid him to come out, come to me, and come out of the boat, and Peter did. He climbed out of that boat and walked on the water. And we know he didn't walk very far before he got scared and began to sink. But Peter is the only man other than Christ in recorded history that's ever been able to walk on water. The only one. Keep in mind, 11 other apostles stayed in the boat that day and didn't get out. And I try to thank myself by putting myself in Matthew. Matthew was on the boat. He wrote about this incident. He was on the boat, and I can't help but think when he wrote about this, thinking, I wish I'd have done that. I wish I'd have got out of the boat and walked on water, because then my name would have been there with Peter's, and just think of the 11 other apostles that didn't. Peter was a little impulsive. We know from time to time. Brother Steve and I were talking very briefly about the Apostle Peter this morning. I found that interesting because he's the one I had on my mind. He preached at Pentecost. He later was deemed to be more or less the leader of the apostles. I think it's in large part because of things that he exhibited right here. We know that he also was very impulsive. He said he'd never deny Christ, and then we know he denied him three times the night of his arrest and crucifixion, denied three times in the famous crow. A rooster crowed at that time. We know that he was the impulsive one, pulled out his knife and cut off the guard's ear when they were trying to arrest Jesus, and Jesus had to stop him, and Jesus took the ear and put it back on the guard and healed it. So Peter was impulsive, but the day that he was asked by Christ to get out of the boat and come to him, Peter walked on water. And what my message I want to give you today, and you'll hear me repeat this several times, the message that I hope you get from this, if nothing else, is if you want to walk on water, you've got to get out of the boat. If you want to walk on water, you've got to get out of the boat. And I can say the boat or the pew or the house, anything, but you've got to get out. The Lord has given you certain talents to use. He gave Peter the ability to walk on water. Now, Peter got scared, and we'll talk about that. But Peter is the only one ever that walked on water. I wish I could say that, even for a brief moment. I wish I could say that I walked on water. If you want to walk on water, you've got to get out of the boat. Leading up to this a little bit, let me backtrack a little bit. And let's go through this event here and talk a little bit more about it. We're in the 14th chapter of Matthew, and I want to back up a little bit just so we can set the stage a little bit here. Back in the 12th and 13th chapter, Jesus has been teaching and addressing the Pharisees. In the 13th chapter, he gets in and gives a lot of his famous parables. He outlines the 13th chapter of Matthew is well known for all these wonderful parables that all are great sermons in and of themselves. We get over here to the end of the 13th chapter, and we find it that Jesus was teaching up in his hometown area of Nazareth. In verse 53 at the end of Matthew 13, 13th chapter of Matthew, verse 53, and it came to pass that when Jesus had finished these parables, he departed thence, and when he was come into his own country, he came back to his hometown of Nazareth. When he came into his own country, he taught them in their synagogue, inasmuch as that they were astonished and said, whence has this man this wisdom and these mighty works? Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary, and his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Jude, and his sisters? Are they not all with us? Whence then is this man all these things? You know, this is the boy come back home. As we talked about, sometimes it's hard to go back home because those are the people that know you well, and they don't believe you've achieved greatness. Sometimes if you've gone out and been able to do good things, people don't necessarily believe it, because I knew him when he was a kid. He was a rotten little kid. Ran all over the church and caused us all sorts of problems. How can he now be a minister or a deacon or that? And that's what Jesus is relating to us here. He goes on and he comments and says, a prophet is not without honor, save in his own country. A prophet has honor unless he goes back home. Then the people know him and he doesn't have any honor anymore. And in his own house. And we see that many times when I think it's wonderful. I see your annual meetings coming up. And y'all are bringing back, you've already got a couple of them here, but you're bringing back all the ministers the last 10 or 20 years that this church has had the pleasure of hearing and ordaining and raising up and watching ministry. You're bringing them back home to hear them proclaim the glory, and that's wonderful. And that's the issue here that Jesus is addressing here. They didn't believe him because they knew who he was. He's coming back home. He's got that experience, and because of that, because his own home people didn't believe him, verse 58, and he did not many mighty works there because of their unbelief. The people of Nazareth missed a wonderful many blessings because they didn't believe that this boy Jesus who's raised in their community was the Christ. It's wonderful to see y'all bringing these young men back home who grew up in this church, and you're bringing them back to not only honor them, but to listen to them preach the gospel, listen to the special blessing that the Lord has given him, something that Jesus tells us people in his hometown didn't do. The 14th chapter opens with about John the Baptist, and John the Baptist is being persecuted by Herod, and we learn that Herod, through a series there, and that's a story in itself that I won't go into, but Herod beheads John the Baptist and hangs his body, buries his body, hangs his head on the wall, and his disciples, verse 12, his disciples came, took up the body and buried it, and then went and told Jesus, and Jesus, of course we know, like any of us are, when we have someone close to us is dead or killed, we grieve about it. And it says here, and when Jesus heard of it, he departed thence by ship to a desert place apart. Jesus is fixing to sail across the Sea of Galilee. He left by ship to a desert place apart, and when the people heard of it, they followed him. Some of them went around the Sea of Galilee on foot to go meet up with him when he got to the other side. Verse 14, Jesus went forth and saw a great multitude and was moved with compassion toward them and heal their sick. Jesus has traveled by boat across the Sea of Galilee over to the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee. And a lot of people have heard about him. Of course, not back in his hometown, but the rest of the people heard about him and went to follow him. And right after that, then the next 7 or 8 verses, we talk about how Jesus fed 5,000 people with 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. This miracle he performed and fed everyone and had 12 baskets of food left over. So 5,000 men, and it says in verse 21, not counting the women and children. So he probably fed between 10 and 15,000 people that day with these just few loaves of bread and a couple of fishes. Then we get to the end of the day. It's evening. We know back from verse 6:15 that it's evening when he's feeding the people. So it's already getting to be evening there on the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee when he puts his apostles back on the boat and says, now sail back across. And he goes up into the mountain to pray. Now that's where we are when we begin this verse 22. Jesus has gone up in the mountain to pray. If you go over and read John, Mark and John, the versions there, they'll tell you that Jesus was afraid of the people. He was afraid they were going to want to make him king. They were going to take him by force and make him their king. They were so impressed with him, and he had no interest in being their physical king, and also didn't want the apostles to get the big head because of what was going on since they were his apostles. He puts them on the boat and tells them, you sail back across the Sea of Galilee. The Sea of Galilee was the major sea up at the top of the Jordan River. We know the Jordan River flows out of the Sea of Galilee and goes down to the Dead Sea. And that's, you know, two of the major bodies of water back in the Old Testament times. Sea of Galilee, Jesus was raised, Nazareth, over on the western side of the Sea of Galilee. Galilee is a body of water that is shaped like a pear-shaped. Bigger at the top and smaller at the bottom. More like the continents of Africa and South America, you know, not near as large, but shaped like a pear. Bigger at the top and it narrows down. At its width, it's about 7 miles wide. And it's about 14 miles long. And the water out in the middle of it is about 150 feet deep. So it's a good-sized body of water deep in the middle. But one thing unique about the Sea of Galilee is it's several hundred feet below sea level. It was a very low lake, way down below sea level. The only body of water that was lower a bit in the world was the Dead Sea. So it's a very low body of water, but yet it has mountains that rise up several thousand feet on each side of it. That particular dynamics causes the wind to come over those mountains and come down, and a storm can come up real quickly on the Sea of Galilee. It's known for its, you know, not a big lake, but 7 by 14 is a good size lake, 7 miles by 14 miles. But it is located such right there with the mountains that the wind coming over them and the cloud formations, a storm can come up real quickly and unexpectedly on the Sea of Galilee. It's known for that, and still today, it's easy for the storm and wind to blow on the Sea of Galilee. So that gives you an idea about what size it is, which it's important, I think we'll see in a minute, the size it is and the fact that a storm can come up very quickly. Keep in mind that we've got his 12 apostles on this boat that he's put on the boat and sent them back over the other side. It's nighttime when he does this. Sends them off at nighttime when it gets dark. Sends them out across that. Now keep in mind, we know at least Peter and Andrew and John and James were all fishermen. Christ took them off of the boat. They were experienced fishermen on the Sea of Galilee. So you've got some experienced seamen here. They know how to row a boat. They know how to get a boat. You know, as long as they've been fishing, they've also dealt probably some of the storms that come up. So you've got experienced men of the sea that ought to know what they're doing. I'm sure all of the men on the boat had experience, but you've got four, clearly we know of, documented, experienced seamen. Let's go down to verse 22 here. Let's go through this real quickly. And straightway, Jesus constrained his disciples, instructed his disciples, told them, you know, he put them under order. I'm sure he did it respectively, but he constrained his disciples to get into a ship and to go before him and to the other side while he sent the multitudes away. Well, he sent them away, it says, and then when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into the mountain apart to pray. And when evening was come, he was there alone. He was up in the mountains alone. He sent the multitudes away and told his apostles, you go back and get on the boat and go back across to the west side of the Sea of Galilee. Verse 24, but the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the winds were contrary. Storm had blown up. Remember, we're in the middle of the night now. Storms had blown up. And if you go over and read it in Mark, it'll tell you that Jesus, when he was up in the mountain, he could see the apostles were struggling with their rowing. They were struggling and having a hard time. They were having a difficult time getting across this body of water. He was up in the mountain praying. He could see the storm was coming. He knew the storm was coming. And yet he had instructed his apostles to go across. Sometimes Jesus sees that we're about to be in a storm and he allows it to happen. As we say, he suffers it to happen. Sometimes we get in storms of life be aware, Jesus knows you're in a storm. And he's watching you, and he knows when you're having problems. He knows when you're having a storm. Storms comes up, get here into verse 25, and in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went into them walking on the sea. The fourth walk of the night. The fourth watch of the night. When's the fourth watch of the night? Well, nighttime begins at 6 p.m. A watch was 3 hours long. First watch would be 6 to 9. Second one would be 9 to midnight. Third one would be midnight to 3 a.m. So we've just started the fourth watch, so we're probably between 3 and 4 a.m. These guys got on the boat at evening when it got dark, and they've been fighting the storm for several hours now. And it's 3 in the morning. Can you imagine trying to row on a boat in a storm, and it's 3 in the morning, these guys are exhausted, and they're tired, and they're in a storm. And Jesus allowed that to happen. He knew it, saw it. Over in Mark, and he said he saw it. Knew they were in a storm and knew it was coming. And yet he allowed them to go forward in the storm, knowing they were there. And about between 3 and 4 in the morning, he comes to them. If you go over and read the book of John, it'll tell you that they were about 25 to 30 furlongs out in the middle of the Sea of Galilee. A furlong is an eighth of a mile. So you take 25 to 32, and you'll see that they were about 3.5 miles out in the middle ocean, out in the middle of that sea. That sea's 7 miles wide, 3.5. They are out in the very middle part, in the deepest part. They were in the worst part of the water. And they knew it because they knew the Sea of Galilee. You got four guys who knew the Sea of Galilee extremely well. So they're in the worst part of the storm. They're exhausted and tired in the middle of the night. They've been all day long with Christ, up in the mountains and feeding and doing all those things they do, a lot of walking around, and now they're in the boat, and they've gone all night long, and they're exhausted, and they're tired. They're out in the middle. Jesus went to them walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a spirit." And they cried out in fear. They thought a ghost was coming at them. And keep in mind, we don't think well at 3 in the morning. I don't anyway. Maybe you're better than me. But if I wake up in the middle of the night, even while I wake up, especially if I'm exhausted, if I'm trying to work all night, that's why it's not good that we do those things or drive or anything, because we're tired and they were not expecting to see Christ. They left him over on the other side. But Jesus came walking to them right in the middle of the storm when they were tired, and they didn't recognize it. Sometimes we may not recognize when Christ is coming to see us when we're in a storm. You know, our mind is so occupied with the things going on. I'm in the hospital. I've got problems. My wife's in the hospital. My child's missing. I've got problems at work. I've got a storm going on. I'm tired. I'm exhausted of fighting this. We may not see it when Christ is coming at him, but we see here he revealed himself to him. He was coming, and he said straightway Jesus said to them, "Be of good cheer. It is I. Be not afraid." He calmed them down. And Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it be thou, bid me to come unto thee on the water." And Jesus said unto him, "Come." When Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water. Very clear that Peter walked on the water. Peter walked on the water to go unto Jesus. But when he saw the wind boisterous, when he saw the storm, Peter took his eyes off Christ, saw the storm. When he saw the wind and how boisterous it was, he was afraid, beginning to sink, and he cried out, saying, "Lord, save me." And the Lord let him drown. Didn't happen, did it? And it says, and did the Lord wait a while? He was scared and about afraid he was going to drown. I'm sure he sank just a hair. It says, and immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand, caught him, and said unto him, "O thou of little faith, wherefore did thou doubt?" And keep in mind, Peter's tired and exhausted in the storm. Jesus has a great lesson in here for us. But you reach him immediately when Peter got out of the boat. Peter was the only one to get out of the boat. There's 11 in the boat that were afraid to get out and walk on the water. Much safer in the boat than it is to get out and walk on water. But Peter got out and walked on water, and even then he got scared. But Jesus immediately saved him. Even when we take the chance and the risk of getting out of the boat, if we fail, Jesus was there immediately to save him. Didn't wait. And when they were coming to the ship, the wind ceased. Number one, when Jesus and Peter got back in the boat, the storm immediately ceased. If you go over and read the book of John, it says, and not only that, not only did the wind immediately cease, they were immediately over on the western shore. Jesus not only calmed the wind immediately, but he took the boat that last 3.5 miles over to the western side of the shore. Jesus fixed the problem immediately. They were in a storm. They were probably afraid for their life. Didn't know what they were going to do. They're tired. When Jesus comes in, though, in the middle of a storm, he can solve the problem immediately. Calm the storm and take you home to the other side. Then they that were in the ship came and worshipped him, saying of a truth, thou art the Son of God. Keep in mind, this happened at, you know, between 3 and 4 in the morning, probably. It's interesting if you look at the Bible and study it, how Jesus works and how the Lord works, how he does these things with various timing. You remember back, you go back and look at the, I believe it's the 14th chapter of Exodus, when Moses was leading the people out of Israel and he led them across the Red Sea and divided the waters. And it says, and then Pharaoh's troops were about to come through in their chariots. And the Lord told Moses, now, you know, wave your hands and let the water recede. What time did that happen? About 3 or 4 in the morning, when he caused that water to crash back in on the Pharaoh's chariots. Remember going to the book of Judges, 7th chapter of Judges, I believe, when Gideon was trying to defeat the Philistines and started out with all these thousands of men, and he and the Lord, they reduced it down to 300 men. That's all he needed was 300 men, and Gideon equipped them all with trumpets. That's where we hear about the Gideon's trumpets. Gave them all trumpets and gave them all torches they put in clay pots. And hid the torches, and they surrounded the Philistines. Thousands of Philistines, only 300 of them. They surrounded them, and at the right moment, when Gideon sounded the trumpet, they all sounded their trumpets, and they broke their pitchers open, and suddenly the Philistines looked up, and they're hearing all this noise, and they're surrounded by lights. They got deathly afraid and ran away. And Israel chased after them and defeated them, because a great battle plan here worked. What time did that happen? About 3 or 4 in the morning, if you'll go read there. Interesting how the Lord does this and works these things in coincidental fashion, isn't it? He knows when people are tired. He knows when they're vulnerable. And sometimes we have like this where faith was tested. Peter, I would say, passed the test. I think we should look at Peter and say he's the only one of those other apostles that got out of the boat. You know, maybe Peter got scared and was afraid. I'd say there's 11 more of them in the boat that were more afraid than him. Safer to stay in that boat. I trust the boat more than I trust Jesus. That's what the other 11 are telling us. Now, you know, we're not talking about these people passing a test for going to heaven. These are the apostles in the boat. There's clearly, these are the ones that are children of God. These are his most favored people. These are all, you know, we're talking about children of God here. Good, faithful. His most faithful people were those apostles. And yet all but one stayed in the boat. Peter got out, and even then, for a moment, he faltered. And the Lord immediately, he saved him. My message to you is, if you want to walk on water, you got to get out of the boat. There's more to life, and we find this, and more to life, especially with Peter, than staying in the boat. Or I can substitute that for the pew or at the home. Each of us is given gifts by the Lord. He all gives us some talents. We have to ask ourselves, are we using those talents the way the Lord would have us use them? It's much safer to stay on the pew. It's much safer to stay at home. It's much safer to stay in that boat than to get out and try to walk on water. You think, I'm afraid. I'm afraid it's a storm coming up. There's a storm going on. Why in the world would I get out of the boat and step on the water during the storm? It's much safer here in the boat. Even though they were afraid and they were having troubles, it's much safer here in the boat than it is to trust Christ and get out and walk on water. When he invited them to get out, Christ said was come. I think he was speaking to all of them. Peter was the only one that got out and came. He's the only man now that's recorded in history of walking on water. Yeah, he got scared even after he got out of the boat, but the Lord saved him. And keep in mind, these are apostles that are in the boat. They're the ones that's struggling with something they ought to do, struggling in the storm. Even our church leaders, our ministers and our deacons, we struggle too. We get scared from time to time too. We get afraid to get out of the boat too. But he's speaking to all of us here about, you have to ask yourself, am I doing what the Lord wants me to do? Am I trying to be safe and stay in the boat? Or am I taking my talents I have and putting them to work for the Lord? Maybe you have the ability to speak. I can tell you from experience, it's a whole lot easier to turn that down and sit over there in the pew than it is to get up here and try to preach the truth. I'm scared to death that I'm always going to preach something that's not true. We're scared to death. It's a much easier to sit over there. It's much easier to do that. You may have the ability to lead singing. You may have the ability to give public prayer. That's a gift that is bestowed in a lot of people, and you don't know it until they speak. Lord gives you talents, and if you put them to work for Him, those talents don't belong to you. Those belong to the Lord.
That's right.
And you give them to the Lord, and if you put them to use, once you get out of the boat, your life is never the same. Never be the same again, because you get out of the boat and the Lord will richly bless you. You think, but if I get out in that stormy sea and that water, maybe I'll just wait till the weather clears up. Why do you think the Lord let them get into a storm before He came to rescue them? You're going to have storms every day of your life. You're going to have storms all the time. You're going to lose a spouse. You're going to lose a child. You're going to lose a parent. You're going to have trouble at work. You're going to have financial troubles. You're going to have the storms of life. We're told that. Keep in mind, the Lord knows every storm you're in. He knows it, He's aware of it, and He's there. He's teaching us, though, even in storms, we need to get out of the boat and do what He's had for us to do. You may think, Brother Don, I don't have any talents. I can't sing. I can't give public prayer. You can do private prayer. Your minister and the ministers who get up here, these two men on the front row and Brother Steve, they need your prayers. And the prayer of a fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. Your prayers help the minister so much when he's up here in the pulpit. You have the ability to pray. Lord's given each one of us, without ever uttering a word, you have the ability to pray for your ministers, pray for your leaders, pray for your deacons if they can help make the right decision. Pray for the people here. You've heard the prayer list this morning. You have the ability to do that. The Lord gives you the talent to do that. And you say, well, you know, Brother Don, I can't. I'm sick. I've got a problem here. I've got cancer. The dreaded disease of cancer, just to use an example. And so I don't really have the ability to do much. You are absolutely the best counselor for someone else that has cancer. You've been through that. You can go through them and you can tell them, yeah, you've got to do chemotherapy and it's hard. But you can live through it. And you can get through that, and you can be a great blessing and inspiration to your family by going through that. You can say, you know, I've lost a child, I've lost a spouse, and really life is over for me. You are absolutely the best person to get out of that boat and go counsel somebody. Counsel somebody in the funeral home or somebody at home. You know, this individual lady may have lost her husband, or her husband may have lost his wife. If you've lost a spouse, you can go to talk to them, and they appreciate it so much because they know you got out of the boat and came to see them, and you're right there with them. You know what they're going through. You don't have to say it. You don't have to give a lot of explanation. They know you've lost a spouse. When I lost my spouse, I know it was tough on me, and I had to go by continuing work. And within a matter of a few weeks, a good friend of mine there in my hometown of Lubbock, he lost his wife also, really very suddenly. But I knew what he was going through, and I was tired and exhausted as I came in home one night, came in from the airport, and I knew they were having visitation at the funeral home, and I went down to see him. And I walked in the door of that funeral home, and he had a lot of people there, but he saw me, and we walked, and we met in the middle of the room, and everybody watching us, and I didn't say a word, but we hugged each other. I knew what he was going through, and he knew what I was going through, and he doesn't let me forget that to this day. That everybody in that room knew that we identified with each other. I didn't have to say a word. You have that ability. You have that, especially if there's things you have in your life that other people are going through, you are the absolute best counselor. And we know over in the book of Romans, the Lord tells us then, by comforting someone like that, you get comforted yourself. It's a great blessing when you get out of the boat. But you got to get out of your house. You got to go to the hospital and you got to visit people. You got to go to somebody's house and visit them and tell them. You got to write them that note and tell them, I know what you're going through. You know, you got to help counsel them. You have great talents. It may not be preaching. It may not be leading a song. It may not be public prayer. If you do, though, you should. You should get up when asked. You should get up and pray. Even if you think, I can't pray, I stumble through my words and I've got a slow tongue, you're an inspiration to your family. You're an inspiration to your children when you take part in that service. You're an inspiration to your spouse and to your loved ones when you do those things that you're asked to do. Whether you think, I can't do anything except carry out the garbage, then carry out the garbage and do a good job and don't wait around and do it. Get out of the boat and go do what you can do. Because the Lord, you think, well, if I do that, I'll fail. I'll try to get up and lead and I'll fail and I'll stumble all around. Peter did that too. He said, the Lord immediately gave him comfort. The Lord immediately saved him. If you're getting out, stepping out of the boat in behalf of the Lord to do His work, the Lord will richly bless you. Peter cried for help, and the Lord immediately responded, because he came doing what he thought the Lord wanted him to do. You'll always get stronger. I'll close with this. Proverbs, third chapter of Proverbs tells us, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and that not of yourselves. You know, He'll lead you the way. I'm going to go to that because I had it on my mind. Now I've lost it. Third chapter of Proverbs, trust in the Lord with all thy heart. Lean not to thine own understanding. Now it's coming to you. Lean not to thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge Him, and He shall direct thy paths. Trust in the Lord, lean not to your own understanding. There is no way I'm getting out of that boat because the waters are rough, the seas, it's a storm, and I'll drown and I can't swim. Peter didn't think about those things. I want to go to the Lord. I want to go serve the Lord and do the Lord. And even when you fail or feel like you're failing at times, the Lord will rescue. Trust in Him, lean not to your own understanding. Acknowledge Him in all thy ways, and He will direct thy paths. You've been very kind to me with your attention. My prayer is that the Lord will richly bless each of you. Come forward, Brother Steve.